woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Out. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Jack Silverman helping him out. SP Futures up 875. They didn't move much hardly at all last night, but they're up this morning. Dow Futures up 65. NASDAQ Futures 37. This is after a down week. If you weren't watching on Friday, the S&P Futures were down almost 19 points, 1850. NASDAQ down 60. Dow only down 68 as Boeing was actually up, even though they are taking almost a $5 billion hit in the 737s. That didn't include a lot of stuff, so I'm going to say that number is only going to go up. Do we have Stephanie?
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well.
What's the word? The good word.
I think it's interesting. Do you think the futures market anticipated a higher cut by the Fed?
Well, that's what we. If they don't meet for another 5 years, every day will be up on anticipated cut by the Fed.
That's so true.
It's. I mean, it really is kind of in a no news. Well. There's really all kinds of news. I mean, the question is what you want to focus on. Now the latest is that the Iranians have captured 17 alleged U.S. spies. How would you like to be a spy on the ground in Iran? What a horrible job that would be. It was I got a quick story about bricks and mortar versus the rest of the world. Somehow or another, I managed to lose my car keys or truck keys. I don't think I lost him. I think the guy was over doing work Friday night, but I thought they were his and scooped them up. But get a load of this stuff. I found the spare. You would never have guessed.
That's important.
It. Yeah. So I say, okay, I better get a couple of new ones. So I go online, and this guy's got the blanks for $30, and this guy, if you call a dealer, expect to pay $50 a key and all this stuff. So I call Audrey's cousin, or she called him. Who's in the car business, and he goes, just go over to Ace Hardware. They do everything.
Yeah, they do.
So I go over there, and the guy goes, well, if you want the one with the rubber, no, the nice one, that's $4. If you want just the metal, it's $3.50. And I go, really? He goes, yeah, why? Does it have a chip in it? No. Well, if it had a chip, we could do that too. All right, well, here you go. So 2 minutes later, I had two new keys for $8, and, I'm going to say score one for bricks and mortar.
Yeah, keys are pretty easy to come by as long as you don't want any electric gizmos that go on them. That's when it gets expensive.
Well, these are double cuts. So a lot of places, the traditional places can't do that, but evidently these guys have invested in the double cut machine. So,
have you seen, and this is a thrilling topic probably for our things, but have you seen the ones? There's like one in Menards, and I think there's one in Home Depot now, where you don't even talk to a person. You just put your key in this big magical box and decide which key you want and push a button, and then it tries to sell you more keys than that on its own.
I love it.
Yeah, it's actually kind of nice because you don't have to go searching for that one person that can make the keys in the whole organization, which is usually how it's at least happened for me in the past.
Well, I have two questions for you, since you are somebody who's out and about and who I honestly think has your finger on the pulse of humanity. Why, when I go into the Myers on Saturday, 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and there's maybe four other people in the place, and there's, they actually do have one or two cashiers. Why are people, when the cashiers are standing there doing nothing, why are people bringing the stuff out, bringing the stuff up themselves? They want to put these people out of work or what?
Well, I think it's, I think people don't want to deal with people.
Why? They're pleasant as all get out.
No offense, if you're up at 7 in the morning, which I know you are regularly, because you're on up for the show every week, and so you're up early. But, you know, I think some of the early morning folks just don't want to deal with people, so.
There's nobody more pleasant than the people in the Myers at 7 o'clock in the morning. Everybody in the place says hello to you. Why do you want to avoid them? What are you, some kind of weirdo? That, to me, be nuts. Let's see, that person's going to say hello to me. I'll go down the other aisle. I guess there are people like that, but it's just not me, you know.
Well, sometimes also I think you can do it faster on your own, you know. And, I mean, sometimes you just, it depends on what kind of job you are. I think if you're in hospitality in general and you stand at a desk and say hello to people all day long, maybe you don't really want people to talk to you for a couple hours during the day. Maybe
I suppose.
You just get enough.
I suppose. But I always say, by the way, do those people get some kind of a discount over there? Well, no. So why are they doing that when you're here to do it and you stand here essentially bored? I have no idea. They're trying to put me out of a job. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's the one thing that why I like to go to the lines is because, you know, I think it's important to make sure that people are valued, and I want my ring up to be counted, you know, against somebody's job so that they keep it. And also, my own fear is that they try and take away people. Although I was reading an interesting article, I think, in Harvard Business Review over the weekend, and I was talking about, in the finance world, they've done a bunch of studies about, you know, how people, do people want human contact or not when they're talking about their accounts and trading and stuff like that. It's not, do you need an advisor or not? It's about those people who are trying to make a critical decision. Does having an advisor help, right? And so it was interesting. Statistics basically say is that, yes, advisors definitely help making decisions. There's no doubt about that. But people really just need the option to have an advisor, someone to talk to and connect with and bounce their feelings off of in order to feel more satisfied with their ultimate decisions. So I thought that was really relevant.
Well, it is. It's very odd stuff. I mean, you and I. Sometimes when I talk to the rest of our gang, our caucus gang, I wonder. Just saying, I'm sure when they talk to me, they wonder too. So I'm sure it's not only a one way street. But every time you ask a question like that, or you just bring up a subject, there's never really an even playing field on whether or not you should. You know, whether people want advisors, whether they want a broker. When I say advisor, mm-hmm. broker, an advisor usually has a little broker can as well, but pretty much all the time an advisor is going to have an investment advisor is probably going to have discretionary authority over your account. He's probably going to, he or she is going to be doing the trading, and it's, you know, considered a fiduciary relationship. You also, whatever that means. And probably, you're gonna be paying them a fee, whether they trade or don't trade or whatever. Then there's a broker who, he may have discretionary authority, but he does not get paid a fee. He only gets paid when he trades, which, of course, some people get a big hair up their behind about, but, they just get paid differently. And then there's your firms that, you sign up and they really don't care what you do. And I think the difference, unfortunately, or not the difference, one of the things that, Steph, are we entering a world where you can't say one thing without explaining five other things that go with it? I think we are.
I think there's a lot of reference. I think the world's gotten, it's not as simple as it once was.
Because what you just said is very true, except now you have this thing about you that the electronic trading firms, the Schwabs, the Fidelities, those kinds of people. And believe me, I wish I had an electronic system like them. We have one, but it's, you know, they've got Cadillac systems. their whole shtick is you can beat yourself up on your own. They don't care. I mean, they probably care because they lose a client if you blow through all your money. But they have really no responsibility to watch you other than margin and things like that. So,
other than make sure you're not stealing from others, really.
Right. Well, but I mean, yeah, it's pretty hard to do. I mean, but I'm saying, but now the other people have this, quote, responsibility. So it's not just that they're getting paid a little more, but you're paying commissions to Schwab and those people. But if you have a broker, all of a sudden the broker is, like, supposed to be watching you, supposed to care about whether you're old or young. They're supposed to be doing all that kind of stuff. So the other people don't have to do any of that. I mean, or very little. And, I mean, they have to do, you know, you have to, they're not going to let you do something crazy if you put, you know, not speculative on your thing. So, I mean, there is some governor to it, but it's nowhere near the same. So they've decided that, I mean, when Schwab says, okay, if you don't like what you did, we'll give you your money back. Well, they're going to give you some of your commission back, but that's not where they make their money. They made their money on selling your order flow and selling it to other people because you're a dumb order. Every time you make a trade, you think you're a genius, but the fact is you're a dumb order, you're a market order, and that's saleable. So Schwab's not going to give you that money back, you know? So the idea that they're going to try and get you, the best execution anywhere, it'll be defined as best execution. Okay? But the way the world is gone, it may not be good execution. It might be best, because people have to do that with the new rules on that stuff. But it doesn't mean that they won't sell it to somebody. And, so I mean, you have to really understand the world you're dealing in before you can even sort of have an opinion, which is what the rest of the world has now decided, that, everybody's opinion's a good one. Now, in this business, I'm gonna say, Steph, you and I have relatively informed opinions. At least, you may not like what we say, but at least if we explain to you why we like something or don't like something, it's pretty obvious that we've kind of thought something through, right? Now, but if you ask me my taste in women's clothes, I have no idea. If you ask me if that particular bridge looks to me like it's going to stand 20 years or 50 years, and my response to you is, what do I look like, a structural engineer? I am not. It looks to me like they did a pretty nice job and took kind of care, but I don't know if they used the wrong bolts or not, or the right bolts, or they should have used 5 and they used 4. How would I know? Yet everybody in the world has an opinion, right? Oh, that bridge looks fine to me. It'll last for 200 years. Well, do you know anything about bridges? Well, no, but I got my opinion. Okay, and what did, what's her name?
No, our thing, at least in finance, we have an educated opinion,
right?
And there's a big difference. So, over the bridge, obviously, if I was talking to a structural engineer who would investigate the bridge, then I would trust their opinion more over someone who didn't have that kind of background. And unfortunately or fortunately, I think the world used to be a lot simpler place. You know, you could kind of, and the bridge is not a good example of this, but even just a car, you know, you used to be able to go look at a car if you were going to go purchase one. And, you know, maybe you had enough information, enough knowledge to go look and say, well, you know, the engine looks like it's in good condition, you know, there's power steering's in there, you know, this, it's got full, the oil's been checked, it's clearly been well maintained. You could make some kind of assessment, because you had needed only a limited amount of knowledge to be, you know, considered somewhat of an expert. And the problem is that everything's gotten so complicated, including the trading world, that just navigating it requires so much information about a lot of different things that you really do need to rely on experts in order to truly understand the landscape, just because the landscape's gotten so complicated.
Well, I would agree with that. Even when you were talking about, used to be able to think about cars, there I was. I went to, I'm not going to take a shot. You females, you know, I know better than that. Especially my new best buddy, your little one. She and I are hitting it off, I think.
No, I think you're on.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Steph has was she 12-week-old?
Yeah.
13, something. How old is Claire? Was she 13, 14?
She's about 12 weeks.
12 weeks?
She'll be 12 weeks on Wednesday.
And she already has an amazing personality. Anyway, but I went to the auto show with, I went with Odd. We went to the first look, and of course, I don't know, she picked up, we met a couple other of your outfit over there, a couple of the females, right? So we're looking at cars. Every time they get in a car, it's like 20 minutes. Every mirror is pulled out, every this and that. Where's the plugs for my computer, and I'm like, what are you doing in there? Every lever got pulled, every seat got moved, everything, every single car. And I'm going, you know what? There was no thought of what kind of motor did it have. It's a totally different look of things. I of course get in, and if I can't fit, out I go, because being 6'4", there's not many cars you fit in anymore. But I mean, then I was talking to the lady from, talking about way off base on this story. I was talking to the lady in General Motors a few years ago. They came on the show, and I gave an interview, and I said, by the way, what happens to those cars? And she goes, you don't want one of those cars. I said, well, aren't they brand new? She goes, not exactly. I said, what do you mean? They're not driven. Oh, yeah, they'll drive fine, and somebody will buy them. She goes, but that car, she had more asses have hit that seat in the 10 days of the Chicago Auto Show than your ass will hit that seat in the 10 years you own it. Every single lever's gotten pulled. The seat has been moved probably 1,000 more times than you'll ever move it. She goes, you don't want that thing. It is beaten up. But I go, I never even thought of it that way. She goes, the wheel has been moved from one spot to the other. It's like, it's almost like a test case for the inside and all the buttons and everything. Can people wreck them? At the end of the week, if the inside still works and looks good, they think they did a good job on it. Because every person in there is yanking everything all over the place.
You know, it's funny. I was reading an article a number of years ago about the Ford CEO, and he was talking about his board, like his C-level executives, and he had, I believe, three women at the time in his C-suite, which was pretty high, especially in the automotive industry. And whoever was asking questions basically said, so, you know, why do you have so many women, and do you think it's important, and this and that? And he basically said, you know, women make 70%, I'm almost positive the number was 70, it was right around there, make 70% of the buying decisions in the household. And I'm guessing that's because of children and stuff like that. But they didn't explain it. And so having women in my C-suite is imperative to us remaining competitive long-term. And I thought that was interesting. And your description of, you know, women and how they make a decision, it goes to show you, I guess, how women and men make different decisions in purchasing power, and how that can have a really big effect on, you know, appealing to both different sexes is probably something that these
companies they're
going
to say, and this is the stuff I'm going to use. They're going to use the mirror. They're going to use the light. They're going to use the computer hookup. So it sure makes sense to test out the stuff you're going to use, right? I mean, why wouldn't it?
Well, they're going to also use the engine, but it's not a direct use, right?
Right.
They push the button and the car goes on. So it's a little different.
Well, they assume at this age, after 100 years of car manufacturing, the thing's going to run.
One would hope when you pull it off a yard, yes.
Hey, Steph, all the tweets and all the crazy stuff this weekend, I don't want to get into it too deep, but there's, believe it or not, I've been like, don't dislike me for this, I've been, I've been like Trump's biggest defender last week. I don't know why I was in some ways. I mean, you know, in some ways I'm never going to be, but this weekend was interesting listening to all the Face the Nation and all those shows regarding the stuff with these four ladies in Congress, and I think he's being a total cad about the thing. I would never do that, but the one Jewish guy who was on Face the Nation yesterday, I also agree with him, because I think you know, Steph, you know me well enough that I am absolutely colorblind. I don't want to treat anybody of any other color or religion or whatever any different than me. If they're a good person, they're a good person. If they're not, they're not. Just like white people. I mean, there's good ones and there's bad ones. I mean, I think you should be able to say something bad about, if you ever want to say anything bad about anybody, which probably you should button that up, a little bit anyway, especially if you're a president, but, I think you ought to be able to say something that you disagree with, a female or a black person or a Muslim without being racist, without being male chauvinist wanker. You ought to be able to say that. I mean, if you're going to enter the fight, it's the fight.
Well, and I mean, yeah, I agree. I think on this point, the Democrats are going too far on a lot of different things. If they really want to win, they need to pull back and listen to a lot of what the governors are saying. I was listening to a couple of governors over the weekend who were on TV talking, and you know, the governors are really in touch with, I think, what the people want. And that doesn't mean Medicare for all, and that doesn't mean a lot of people have private insurance and they want to keep that. It doesn't mean that we all need to be so politically correct that we can't have a conversation, which is, I think, partly your point. And, you know, I think Trump's comments are somewhat stupid, but, I mean, how many times have you heard over the last couple of years, especially with Trump in office, people, you know, inside conversations when you're in a bar or something say, hey, I don't know why we need those immigrants, why don't they go back home? Right? And I think the problem is that Trump has fostered a sentiment that we don't need immigration here, that the people that are here are good enough, and we don't need everyone else, which is, as I'm sure everyone's heard me say before, is totally, at least economically, not true. And I, like you, I prefer diversity. The more variation, the more interesting it is to me, and the more I can learn about the world. So I think that although I do believe Trump ultimately does not like people of color, the comments, I think, are getting... I mean, Trump's just getting more airtime.
Yeah.
Why don't we start talking about something that's real? Something we need. Like,
well, because they have those...
The fact that he's blown Iran... I mean, he's escalated our relationship with Iran to the point where we're probably going to have to go to war, right? I mean, what... Talk about something important.
Yeah, a guy who ditched Vietnam, you know, type of thing. It's, I don't know. I just, I watched a, God, what a, I couldn't even watch the last part of it. Steph, you ever talk about going off of the road? I turned the TV on the other night, and everybody had already played the Cubs and everybody, so I just flipped it on, and I ended up, I don't know what station I was on, but you ever heard a movie called The Train?
No.
It's a black and white job from the early 60s. It is a dark, dark movie. And I, last half hour, I said, you know what, I can't watch any more of this. But it had to do with, Burt Lancaster was a star. I don't know if you remember him, but, he was a, he was a serious actor. And he, essentially the show was that the Germans at the end of the war had looted this French art institute, for lack of a better term. And loaded this train up with all France's...
I have seen this. Yes.
Yeah, it's... Have you ever seen a darker film? I mean, I've seen a few darker ones, but it's pretty damn dark. When I say dark...
Pretty dark.
They end up... The resistance, this lady from the curator says, these paintings are France's soul. We can't let them get in Nazi hands to sell to essentially losers all over the world. This is our culture. This is our soul. We need to save this train. And meanwhile, their resistance group that Burt Lancaster was the head of was down to, like, from 20 people to 3. Because, I mean, the Germans were pretty relentless at shooting anybody they thought looked at them sideways. So he's like, it's not worth people's lives for paintings. And she's like, well, it's not paintings. It's our soul. This is our culture. So they end up helping the lady. And people are getting killed all over the place, basically. I mean, if you look sideways, they stand up against the wall and shoot you. And yet, the amount of help they got from all the resistance, where they essentially ran a train in a circle, putting different signs in the cities where the Germans thought they were on the right tracks and they weren't, and back in and wrecked the train and a whole. And then every time something happened, they're like executing somebody. I'm going, I can't watch any more people get gunned down. But you know what? That's what war's like. I think, Steph. I mean, it's making these choices between people and stuff and land and people and oil and people. And, you know, the people we've had making these kinds of decisions in my lifetime, I don't know, from Lyndon Johnson on down, I wonder if these people have a clue. And I don't think this is the right guy to be making these decisions. I mean, George Bush, you know, we went and we invaded this place thinking they had all the stuff they didn't have it. I mean, look how many people died. You can't walk on a lakefront without somebody running by you in an artificial leg. I mean, it's the price we pay for this stuff, and you wonder if the people in charge have any concept of what that price is. I mean, there are people in Washington I know that do, but are they the ones in charge? I don't know. S&P Futures still up 8, Dow Futures up 56. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox.
The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everyone. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Jack Silverman helping him out. Also, Miss Stephanie Koenig with us. S&P futures are up 8. Dow futures now up 52. NASDAQ futures up 34. Looks like we're of a positive morning here. We're looking for better than expected earnings because everybody's got these earnings down so low, the expectations that I suspect we might get that. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 28.2%, FTSE up 29.4%, CAC around up 11.2%. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 50.2%. Shanghai down 37, 1.3%. That's a lot. A lot of this has to do with what's going on in Hong Kong, I assume. Hang Seng up down 394, 1.4%. For those of you who don't know, it's turned pretty ugly. They were using rubber bullets and stuff last night. And like, sounded like they were almost in the Gatling guns when you heard a pop, 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 and the rubber bullets did not look fun. Oil, now careful with this. Oil's up 73 cents, 56.36. Every morning, I think, of the last 6 days, we've reported oil up every morning. And yet, at the end of the week, it was down. So the minute the show ends, it starts to go down. Brent up 96. Its spread is now $7.06. Natural gas, 228, still low. RBOB, still very low, 184. We've got gold up a dime, 1426, so it's hanging right up there. Silver up 20 cents, 1640. This is the one that's been, it's caught up to gold. Gold was leading for a while. Now, silver, I'm saying, is pretty much caught up. Maddie or Jack, who's ever got it, Traffic Weather Sports, please.
Coming up on 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a very good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. In fact, there's no significant issues to report at all. Looking good coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways looking good, too. The only somewhat of an issue, and it's not really one, is it's that time of year again where they're setting up for Lollapalooza, which will run from Thursday, August 1st through Sunday, August 4th. So Balboa Drive between Columbus and Lakeshore Drive is now closed as they begin that setup process. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, a beautiful day, considering the heat that we had over most of the weekend. Sunshine, a high of 73. Lots of sunshine and warm temperatures, but not too hot. So it's going to be nice out there. Right now it's partly cloudy and 68 going up to a high of 73. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 110. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 93 degrees in Phoenix. In sports, Cubs were looking for the sweep, but couldn't get anything going on offense. And then Kyle Hendricks was, in spite of pitching really well, was outdueled by Cal Quantrill as the Padres beat the Cubs 5-1, snapping the Cubs' winning streak. They finished the homestand at 7-2, though, as they'll head out to San Francisco tonight to take on the Giants. White Sox were looking for the sweep in Tampa as well, but they were doubled up by the Rays 4-2. Dylan Cease gave up an early grand slam. The offense couldn't get anything going, and the Sox lose that one. Sox have dropped 8 out of their last 10 in spite of winning the first two in that series in Tampa Bay. Diamondbacks had a 4-0 lead over the Brewers, and unfortunately for the Cubs, Diamondbacks blew that lead, and they lost to Milwaukee 7-4. So as we take our Monday morning look at the Major League Baseball standings, the White Sox are 44-52, 8 games below 500, 15 back in the AL Central, third place behind the Indians and the first place Twins. The Cubs are in first place, 54-45. They're 2 up on the Brewers, 3 in the loss column, 2.5 up on St. Louis, as both of those teams won yesterday with the Cubs losing. Lastly, the Diamondbacks are 50-50, firmly in the wild card race at 500, but they're 16 back of the first place LA Dodgers. Lastly, as far as baseball is concerned, a couple of local guys got into the Hall of Fame, Chief. For the White Sox, Harold Baines, and for the Cubs, Lee Smith, both inducted into Cooperstown yesterday, so congratulations to those guys. And the Open champion was not much of a match. Shane Lowry pulled away from the field, shooting 15 under, 6 shots ahead of second place to win the British Open. Chief.
I don't know if you have it there on your board, but our buddy Sully was telling me that the something like the top four groups yesterday, though I guess the weather was bad, the top four groups or five groups were a combined 56 over par.
It was ugly scoring yesterday outside of Shane Lowry. Lots of guys.
One guy in the second group was like 16 over or something.
Yeah, I saw that. It's crazy.
Sounded like you or me. You more. I'd be more than 16 over. You could probably do 16 over.
I don't think I could do 16 over on a major course. No chance.
Yeah, that looked pretty nasty.
How about putt-putt golf?
Putt-putt. No,
there we go.
So you only had a 42. Well, hit the windmill on the last, you know. Those windmills were tough.
Well, when the clown spits it out a certain way, I mean, you never know what you're going to get.
You know what? I don't see any of those courses around anymore, do you?
Not the really elaborate ones, no. It's just the cheap ones that are the little carpet and the wood on the side, and that's it.
Then it was the last hole. If you got the hole in one, you got to play again?
Right.
I used to love those things, actually. God, you know, what a great family golf thing, miniature golf. Go over there, grab a popcorn and a soda, and smack around the thing, and everybody's good to go.
Yeah, it lasted like a half an hour. It's fun and cheap, and yeah, you don't see those anywhere, at least not the real nice ones anyway.
All right, Steph, I think in
resort towns, but yeah, in general, I haven't seen one in years.
Well, the places that had that, and then they had the batting cages. Talk about a nice night.
Mm-hmm.
Steph, I got a question for you. As you might expect, our somewhat conservative Fed buddies, of course, think I'm nuts about this. And you know what? Be honest with you, so does everybody else. Maybe I'll get an ally out of you, or maybe I'll just drop it. I am very concerned about the banking system not doing what the banking system is supposed to do. I was listening yesterday and watching one of the games, and it was commercials from Lend This and Lend That. And I talked to our buddies last week, and I said, a lot of these loans are not being made from the banks. I said, so what? That's competition. That's America. And I go, wait a minute. You're giving these guys free money. You're giving them FDIC insurance, and they can't compete. Why aren't you? You're not worried about that? Why should I be? Well, because you've given them whatever you're giving them that's causing them to make more money than God without giving loans. You probably should stop doing. I mean, if you own a bar and you don't have to sell any booze and you're still making a fortune, you have to ask, what's going on here, right? I mean, how could you? I mean, that's how banks make money in my world. And now,
that's how savings and loans used to make money. Now, when they merged savings and loans and investment houses, that's part of the problem. I think with merging them is that there's no one left who really wants to do loans because the investment house part of the business makes more money.
Well, I think, Steph, it's one of the, in my opinion, it's one of the side effects of zero interest. If you had to pay 2.5% for somebody's money, you'd better get your fanny out there getting a loan at 4 or 5, or you're going to go broke. So if you're not paying, you don't care. I mean, if they can take your money or mine for free, or if with most people, I was reading something last night about how virtually most people cannot come up with $400 if you needed it. Half society. They come up with it, put it on their credit card, but really they don't have an extra $400 in their pocket or in their checking account that's not spoken for. So if that's the case, I'm going to say, I don't know, I'll pick a number. You maybe could pick it. What percentage of bank accounts do you think have less than $5,000 in them? And just about all the big banks charge, per month if you don't have that, right? So if you can give somebody money, they charge you, and they turn around and give it to the Fed to get 2%, why do they ever need a loan? And yet that's what they're supposed to do. And again, I'm not getting any traction in talking about this, but the idea that a lending tree or whatever can out-duel a bank, why doesn't lending tree be... Let's put it this way. If the regulations and all the other crap that go along with being a bank are so onerous that somebody without public money that's insured by the government, without being able to charge fees and ATM fees and everything else to essentially have negative interest on people, if they can kick ass on the bank competitively, I think something's seriously wrong, Steph. And if you take it to the extreme, to where those guys are doing all that, I don't know that the only difference is a loan from one of those guys does not create money. Correct? Because it's people's capital.
Yeah.
To a certain extent it might. But not the same way as like, but I mean, if the banks have such an advantage, I don't think you want 70% of your loans not being in the banking system.
So, it's interesting because when we were out to dinner the other night, you did ask that question of the Fed guys, and I found their response to be interesting, and I hadn't thought of it from that particular perspective. So I spent some of the weekend actually kind of thinking about their response and didn't necessarily come up with a really great perspective on it. But I think that to your question here about the banks making money and just stuff, that it's something like the internet, right? At the moment, Congress and our regulatory bodies have not caught up with controlling your allowing you as an individual to control your information on the internet, right? So once you give information to Facebook, technically they own it. You no longer have rights to it. I mean, that's at least how their contract was up until recently. So I think And regulatory-wise, they haven't kind of caught up with this new way of new importance of owning your own information, right? At least in my opinion. And I think the banking system, too, is trying to figure out how to reinvent itself. It's making a bunch of money in only certain aspects of the business that it used to control, and others have stepped in and basically, you know, disrupted what was controlled by several banks. And now the question is how does it all settle out? So I think we're kind of in that shake-up portion of, you know, economics, where in the next
you only
several
30
years,
seconds,
you're going to figure out what should be, what's sustainable, what's not. And then it's a good time to start understanding and
well, how do we do that? How do we do that when all we do is fight with each other and call each other racist?
Well, that's actually a lot easier to report on, although it doesn't actually provide people
Steph,
much value.
Thank you very much. You out of town this week? You're back next Monday?
I'm back next Monday, yes.
All right, well, you know, let's dig in a little deeper on this one. Have a nice time. You guys have earned it. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures up 32. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Jack Silver. We also have Mr. Carl Denninger. Hey, Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Carl, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, except I don't know where to start with all this crazy stuff going on. I just, I've been fighting about banks and alternative loan sources and not getting anywhere there with my Fed guys. They seem to take it in stride. I'm trying to figure out, are we going to have a war here? And, on the one hand, we went, now all of a sudden we went, do we really want the British destroyers over there running right next to ours, escorting their tankers through the place like we do? I don't know if we know what we're doing or what we want on just about any subject here. It just seems to me we're a little bit clueless or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, on the oil thing, it's kind of interesting. You realize China is violating the Iranian oil sanctions, even though they're claim they're not technically doing it.
They're all technically doing it because they're all selling it. I mean,
well,
selling.
Yeah, but what China's doing is keeping they're not clearing the oil through their customs system.
Okay.
Okay. So what they're doing is they're holding it in what amount to big storage tanks on their end. All right. So the ship goes from Iran to China, unloads the cargo, but China doesn't book it as received. And therefore, technically, isn't violating customs because it's still legally, technically anyway, is owned by Tehran, even though the oil is sitting in a Chinese tank.
The problem with oil is you use it, so you can't really, like, lease it.
Well, yeah, you use it, but at present, what's happening is it's filling these tanks up. It's not being consumed.
Strategic oil reserve.
Kind of like what we do with the Strategic Oil Reserve, right? Except we do it underground. They apparently are doing it in above ground tanks, and in a couple of cases at least, they have some of their VLCCs, their large tanker ships, that are sitting just offshore their ports, anchored, not going anywhere, but they're full of Iranian oil.
But how shouldn't we have to? Somebody have at least a minor, almost like a civil service economics test to become an advisor, like in the White House? And I'm not just talking about this administration. The remember back in the day, I don't know if listeners remember this, when there were oil sanctions against Iraq, when Saddam Hussein was still there. So they said, well, they're going to let them sell a certain amount of oil for medical reasons and those kinds of things. Humanitarian, wasn't that the word?
Yeah.
But by the way, we're gonna spank them a little bit, and we're gonna say they can't sell it at the world price. They've got to sell it at, like, what was it, like a 25% discount, or some.
Yeah, reason. The problem with that. I mean, you know, you understand the problem with that, right? Oil's fungible, yeah. just like money is.
Well, imagine the two people that got in the middle and were the quote middlemen were Saddam's two useless kids, right?
Right.
So the oil companies come over and they say, look, we're willing to pay $20 a barrel, that's the world price. Well, we can only get 12. Well, let's see. That puts 8 in play, right? I mean, I'm saying if you have a freshman year in college knowledge of economics, you know that $8 is going to go someplace.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. And see, that's, you know, there's 400 different ways to scam a sanctions regime. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, this is just another one. It's just, I just think it's rather interesting the hypocrisy that we show when it comes to supposed civil rights and, you know, things like this. I mean, you know, the Uyghur thing in China, right? You got a million people in what amount to concentration camps. But we're going to have open trade with these guys and that's fine. We've got Iran, which is they're the bad guys. They just seized a UK ship, right? Oops, we forget about the one that Britain seized of theirs.
Right, yeah, we forgot about that.
By the way, that one was full. The one that Iran seized was empty. If you saw the video of their guys rappelling down to the deck, it obviously didn't have anything in it. It's running, 8 feet above the loaded water line.
Yeah.
The bulbous bow's completely out of the water. So, yeah, I mean, that was an empty ship. By the way, the path that it was taking implies but doesn't prove that maybe that wasn't really going the right way. Okay, in other words, maybe Britain was sending that ship back and forth through the straits empty on purpose, kind of like bait.
Unbelievable.
Now, I'm not entirely sure of this. Okay, but yeah. It's just kind of fishy.
Careful.
There's all kinds of weird stuff going on. You can't believe anything that anyone tells you.
Careful. If you were a female or of a different color, they'd say you didn't love America.
Well, you know, my view of this is, where are we getting involved in this nonsense? Well, by the way, we don't need their oil. Okay? I mean, you know, we
sort of do.
Plenty of it over here.
We don't have plenty of it here. We still import every day.
We don't need to.
Sure we do.
No, we don't. We have the ability today. Now, of course, this will go away, all right? I mean, you know, oil, it's not that we're actually short on oil. We're just short on cheap oil.
Right now, today, I think we still import like 30% of our stuff or more. And if you give us sacred cow status with Canada and Mexico, probably, but they're in the world market too. They're not going to sell it to us at 60 if they could sell it somewhere else at 90.
Well, but that's true with any commodity, right? All right, but the real question is this: can we supply U.S. requirements? And the answer is yes.
I'm going to say right now the answer is no, but I will look it up right now. Very, very seldom disagree with you, my friend. But I look.
Yeah,
this,
it's look now. Now that's the, now you know part of this. Part of this is the inherent scheme and scam, if you will, that has always gone on in the U.S. oil market, which today, you know, we have this situation where you go sink this hole, right, to frack it, okay? Cost you $10 million to sink the hole. And the oil that you get out of it is worth, at today's price, $8 million. What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah.
Right? Okay? Now, this works only as long as you can keep going back and borrowing another $10 million to sink the next hole.
Now, do you want to argue with Forbes himself?
The
U.S. is not a net exporter of crude oil. The U.S. is still a net importer of oil to the tune of 4 million barrels per day.
Yeah, 4 million, but what do we actually, what do we consume a day?
21, and when we make production of oil and other supply that's fed in refineries, a little over 18. In other words, we're getting closer, but we're still 4 short.
Yeah, we're 4 short, but we wouldn't be 4 short if we needed, if we actually needed to produce it, we could.
Well, I mean, the economics lesson that Carl is teaching here is that when you look at the oil reserves of any country, by definition, is oil that can be brought out of the ground at today's market price. So if you were to say the market price is 200, would we have twice as much oil? The answer is yeah, right?
The question really becomes, in the game that's being played today, is that we are sinking oil wells, and gas wells for that matter. Gas wells are a different problem because the current spot market price is below the cost of production in the United States. And so we have a Fed and federal government that through their deficit spending and through their game playing in the markets are allowing these companies to go out and sink holes in the ground that don't return as much as they cost to sink.
And
that's a very clever game that works for a while. If you look at the history of the Texas-Oklahoma, oil industry since back to the days of Standard Oil, all right, this boom-bust cycle has gone on periodically forever. It's not a new thing, and it's going to continue to go on, and companies, you get on the wrong side of that curve, and you end up bankrupt because you can't finance the next hole.
It may not sound like a Carl, but sometimes I like really neat electronic stuff. They had this chart or graph or map of the U.S. and when did it go to like $80? It was like 3-4 years ago or something. I'm foggy on here, but they showed all these fracking places, and and it was a what do you call it, an interactive map, right? And they showed all the places where it was going to start to happen. And it went as far as Northeast Ohio. There was huge crap in the paper here in Illinois regarding Southern Illinois. There's fracking capability, and of course the state. We go from one seemingly incredibly poor governor to the next, and I think we're there again. But they basically told these counties, "You guys got to be ready for fracking." And yet, I'm reading these statistics. One poor county had, I don't know how many bridges they had, Carol, and I'm saying 10% of them were capable of hauling whatever machinery you need for fracking without the bridge caving. yet they put it on the county that the county had to redo all these bridges without giving them any money, you know, type of thing. Okay, fine. Carl, build yourself a new house. Yeah, except I'm broke. I don't ask whether you're broke or not. Build yourself a new house. But, I mean, it was really ignorant. And I actually have a listener. I haven't heard from her in years, but she came to Chicago, listened to the show when we were on the air, and would write in once in a while. Well, turns out, Carl, her husband, who I think passed away, he and his other families had a hunting lodge in Pennsylvania. I don't know if you've ever driven through Pennsylvania and you look up and you see who the hell owns all these mountains. Well, evidently, yeah. There's dudes up there that have hunting lodges and stuff, and I don't know if they own the mountain or what they do. And I can't, maybe you do, maybe you don't. I mean, again, I don't know nothing about property stuff in Pennsylvania. But evidently, there was oil and natural gas up there. So they cut a deal with these guys, where they gave them this money up front, and they had to put in a road to get the stuff up there. They had to put in, they put in temporary pipelines. They were just laid on the ground, over other people's property who they had to pay until they get to I guess it was a railhead. I mean, I don't think there's a pipeline up there. Must have been until they got to a railroad track or maybe a road. I don't know. So they spend $1.5 million on a road. They do all this stuff, and all of a sudden the price comes down, and then they just leave. And I think they had to spend another $1 million to put the road back the way it was, where there was no road. So, I mean, if you raise the price 25 hours and said it's going to be here for 10 years, all kinds of stuff would happen, maybe in areas where people don't want it to happen. Right now, the nice thing about fracking is it's in the middle of Texas or North Dakota. Who the hell cares if they screw up a West Texas, right? I mean, nobody lives there anyway except a bunch of jackrabbits. So it's not like
and that's part of the thing that, you know. But this is again, this is not a new phenomenon when it comes to the oil trade. The other thing is, and this is the real irony in all of this, that under 15 United States Code Chapter 1, which, you know, I talk about a lot, right, with regards to healthcare and everything else, cartels are illegal, right? They're felonies. Now, interestingly enough, after the 1970s oil shocks, Congress specifically exempted any cartel that a sovereign government is involved in.
Well, yeah.
I wonder who that was aimed at.
I'm going to say one thing, Carl, that if you and I are walking down the street and somebody aimed for us with a bus and croaked us both, no one else in the world would care about antitrust.
Well, I know, and you know what, but you look at essentially all of the really nasty economic distortions that are screwing Americans, and they come out of that.
Right.
I mean, essentially all of them. It doesn't matter which ones they are. You know, people say, well, you know, if we actually enforce this, then Saudi Arabia would be forced to pump as much oil as they possibly can, because otherwise their budget would collapse because they couldn't sell it otherwise, right? I mean, you know, if the price of oil is $40 instead of, you know, 57 or what is it right now, 56 and change, they'd have a major problem. Well, gee, who would be the beneficiary of that? I think that would be me.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I'd love it if my gas price went down. So would you. So who's, you know, what are we doing here? All right, as a nation, what are we doing here? Well, you know, all those guys that are fracking, they'd all go bankrupt. Well, for today they would, yes. But you know what? If you have something that is a limited resource, and we have some of it here and they have some of it there, let's burn up theirs first.
Well, I mean, that's been, I had college people, college professors told me that, you know, back in the day. They said, okay, they used to say we had shale oil. I don't think they knew we had so much fracking, but they used to say we had shale oil and the Canadians had tar sands. So we might as well burn off the other guy's stuff first. basically.
Well, the thing about fracking is, and there is an awful lot of it available there. The problem is the depletion rate is several times that of just a regular straw.
Well, and you also have places when I don't know if you ever, well, you like to go skiing, but you never, I don't know if you had to drive from this direction, but you go across Nebraska and there's out in the middle of the field, there's one of those doinker oil wells going up, yeah, and down. They probably pull a barrel or two a day. Some of those, if you show up with any kind of power, you know, water, problem is you need a lot of water to do fracking.
Right.
Because you're basically shoving water down the forest, throwing oil out. And you're not gonna try busting, plus we would hope nobody's stupid enough to screw up the Ogallala aquifer for oil. But, you know, people I'm sure are willing to try. Because that's where the whole midsection of the country gets their water, right?
I mean, right.
You can never really, like you said earlier, Colonel, you can never really get the straight story out of anybody. And I guess the question is, why not? I mean, it's a lot of what the Democrats, the world was, yesterday the world was socialism. They had some lady in, and she refused to let Margaret Brennan even give her the question because she had her, by the way, ever tell you the worst guest I ever had was David Stockman. He just,
wow.
I couldn't get yeah, a word in it. He did a 15-minute stump speech without so much as a breath. I don't know how he did that. He must have actually been pumped in his little toe or something. He never stopped talking. And this lady never stopped. All she did every time she was asking her about Trump and this and that and dividing the country, all she kept saying, how could we? Nobody wants to talk about the labor numbers. Well, I mean, I talk to you every month, and I know the labor numbers are the same as they were in Obama, pretty much, maybe even a little worse.
Right.
But she goes, nobody wants to talk about. In other words, they're pissed at the press because the press isn't talking about what they want to talk about. Yet the other side, but Mike, the main word yesterday was from Trump and from all these, you know, the Republicans around the air was, we don't want to go socialistic, that's not America. Now, I contrast that with I think he was a Democrat, I won't say dumb, because he has, obviously, has a skill set, he's in Congress, and I'm not, so I'm not going to say, but the guy that pulled out the $20 bill and was ranting and raving about how this is a very special thing, and it's good everywhere, it's good this way, and it'll always be a $20 bill that anybody can use, we don't need a, I mean, the guy, of course, should know that the $20 bill is refused a lot of places now. You can't bring it to a closing. You can't. There's a lot of places you can't use a $20 bill by his regulations. But the Republicans should be able to look at what the Democrats are saying and realize that something's wrong. I mean, AOC and her gang, I don't think their solutions are anywhere you and I want to go. But the fact that they recognize a problem, the problem's there. I mean, I'm going to say that I won't exactly call it socialist. I'll call it fascist. Is probably in over 50% of our industries. Name me five industries that are competitive. I don't think you can.
Oh, yeah, and that's, that's one of the things that I've been ranting about now for a long time, is that it was bad enough. There were little pieces of it, even in the nascent internet industry, when I was running my company. We had 100 competitors, and there were still pieces of it, okay? There was a meet point in the Chicago area that Ameritech set up, and they were doing things with the circuits going into there that were arguably extraordinarily illegal, considering that that's a regulated monopoly, right?
Yeah.
Right? They have the right of way that nobody else can get. But nobody cared. Nobody within the ICC cared. Right, they're supposed to be the regulators. They literally could care. They said, that's an unregulated service. They said, well, yes, but they're bundling it with a regulated one.
Right.
Okay, there's a problem here. And so nobody cared, and now it's literally everywhere. It doesn't matter where you turn. And, you know, we look at this today. How many real choices do you have for internet service? I've got two. One that's actually competitive, the other one at a tenth of the speed.
I would say that in
DSL.
In my neighborhood we have two, but in Rodriguez there's one. And I got a real question for you. With the CBS versus, now you brought up the subject and my old brain is jagged. I wanted to ask you, in the war between CBS and AT&T/DirecTV, now just the idea, Carl, do you think if you were on the board of whatever governmental agency it is, you would have allowed one of the land cable lines to buy one of the satellites?
No.
I'm going to say no.
And you know, but I wouldn't have allowed an awful lot of the consolidations going on so far. I mean, you know, you look at in the internet space, what's happened in the so-called over the top. You know, now they say, well, you know, it doesn't matter so much because, you know, now you can get a YouTube subscription, right? And you know, you can do that over your internet connection. I look at the progression of these things, and I say, you know, what's supposed to happen, you look at what's happened with personal computers over the last 20, 30 years, they're 1,000 times faster, they have 100 times the memory and the disk storage, and they cost a quarter as much.
Right.
All right? And that is supposed to happen everywhere there's technology, because that's what innovation, that's what productivity is. Right? If you really get down to an economic perspective, that's the definition of productivity. You do more with less. And yet we're continually told, the price of a car going from $6,000 to $25,000, that's normal. That's supposed to happen. Because the car's nicer and it's better, it has leather seats and it has air conditioning and it tries not to run into other things. And I say, well, wait a minute. The definition of productivity is doing more than less with less. Therefore, the normal state of any economy, absent people doing things that they're not supposed to do, is deflation.
Well, but Carl, but you're giving a lesson here that make sure we give it. The hardware remain competitive, so been innovative and the price dropped. However,
right.
You let Microsoft, you not you personally, the holistic you, you let Microsoft put WordPerfect out of business, roughly, in other places. Yet the cost of your Microsoft is probably every bit as high as it ever was, if not higher.
Well, it's even worse in certain other areas. What Adobe has adopted with their so-called Creative Cloud. Okay, everything is now a subscription, and Microsoft is trying to do it too. I mean, even Boeing has jumped on this, in that you can't buy an avionics package anymore. You can't actually pay cash for it from them.
Really?
There's no such thing. It's leased.
Well, that's what IBM did when they were a monopoly, right?
Well, but this is the secret to how Boeing has grown all these earnings.
Well, they also get nothing but money from the government.
Well, I understand that, but you take a look at all these different companies and how the shift has gone from physical product sales to so-called services. They're selling the same thing, but they've annuitized all of their revenue streams.
And
of course, people say, well, this is an innovation. Yeah, for who?
Yeah,
I'm
for
getting
who?
The same thing, but I'm paying more money for it.
All right, well, before I forget, I should ask my questions and I'm wandering off like I always do. In the CBS versus AT&T game, we've got essentially a free station on the air station versus cable. Who pays who?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, this is sort of the scheme. Is this carriage rights thing is a little more bound up than a lot of people would think because, you know, the over-the-air station makes its money from the advertising itself, right? I mean, that's how it makes its money because it can't charge you anything because you can receive it for free. How does the satellite provider or cable company has a fixed amount of space available on their wire or on their satellite downlink? There's so much bandwidth available, and that's all there is. And so there's a tension here between those two things because why should DirecTV give you CBS or nothing?
Well, they don't. I
understand that, but that's the argument, right? Is how much does CBS pay?
Well, what I'm saying, when I had the dish. Now we have actually some competitive cable, and the price wouldn't be so horrible if there wasn't $60 a month Chicago tax on it, which is almost making me want to go back to the dish because there's not as much tax. But I had the dish, and I think the local package, to get all your local stuff on there without having to have an antenna and change to the other thing, which you could do, by the way, was like $8 a month, just for the convenience factor, having it all.
Yeah.
Out of the same fat box remote control. They still call them fat boxes, but anyway, that's what we used to call them. I never really knew who paid, whether the local station like just allowed themselves to. I doubt if the I mean, I don't know. I mean, if who's paying who?
Well, it gets complicated. But the bottom line is that Dish ends up having to pay CBS.
Well, because it's but not very much, I don't think.
No, but
I mean, not like ESPN.
The Dish, no, not very much, but per customer is not the point, right? If you have a million customers, all of a sudden we're talking about real money.
Well, I'm sure they're passing it through.
Oh yeah, of course.
But one thing you mentioned earlier, is if you wrote in like 10 days in a row with Mr. Matt Weber, who is by the way becoming a very bright and mature person, except for one thing, he will argue with you. How he's gotten away from the cable and he's got all this other stuff going. I go, Matt, it's the same pipe. One day you're going to find that 90% of the people have left cable and are using Denager.com to get all the live TV stuff through the same pipe, and all of a sudden one day you're going to pull out your bill and instead of the cable being $80 and the internet being $40, it's going to be the other way around. You still got to use them. It's the only way in the place. And yet,
exactly.
But if ever you want to have a discussion with young people and they have no idea what you're talking about, have that discussion. And I don't know why it's so obtuse to them. I mean,
because they get this idea in their head that somehow you can have something for nothing.
Well, the only thing they might save on, again, Dish versus the cable, is the city is on this. For the landline, which I just dumped, the landline part of my cable, the city wanted $20 a month. Why? I mean,
because they can.
Well, but we're sort of reaching the. Friday night, I had to do a bunch of work in my place, and later I said, I'm going to go grab a beer on the block. And I run into this guy from Texas, and he's a 71-year-old guy. Talk about an interesting character. He was a big negotiator, had a law degree and so forth for Amoco. So from virgin oil fields to gas stations, and the guy had been there, 50 years or something. And, he was telling me that his taxes in Houston, and he's got some pretty big shack, says they're like $5,000. I was telling him here people were paying like 25 and 30. He goes, what are you doing? He goes, they're like $5,000 or $6,000. And I said, well, how come it's so cheap? But here's what I talk about unclear in the concept. I'm sort of unclear. I mean, I guess it's a good idea to have states. Carl, I don't know if you're a states' rights guy or not, but let's just say that we have states. But how we determine, say, for instance, that the people in Alaska don't pay taxes because they get all the oil money, and yet nobody currently living in Alaska bought the damn state from Russia. There were people from New York and Ohio and Illinois that bought the place. Why a national, when you're talking about essentially a national sort of, what do you want to call it? Natural resource. Why a state gets to claim that for just their people? I have no idea.
Well, it gets kind of complicated. I mean, we have, we sort of have the same situations that come up here in Florida because, I live on the water, okay, but I have, when I wanted to put a dock in, I had to go get permits from various people because I don't own the land beyond the high water line. Okay?
I have
a riparian right to use it. But I do not have title to it, and so I can't just go sink pilings into that ground underneath the surface of the water because it's not mine.
Well, when you say riparian rights, those are all. I'm curious. Obviously, people can walk along the shore without you stopping them, right?
You can walk. The state owns all of the land from the mean high water line seaward.
Okay, so where I'm getting to. There's parts of Michigan where allegedly the law is different, where in some areas you can never stop anybody from walking through, because there's no such thing as like a private beach. Yet, if somebody pulls up on a boat and anchors and pulls in and puts up a volleyball net and a Weber, that you can stop, because that's different than walking through.
Right. Here the way it works is that if somebody is sitting in their boat a foot off my dock, and wants to fish, there's nothing I can do about it because I don't own the water and I don't own the land under the water. However, if they step on my physical dock, that's my property.
Okay.
Okay, so I can physically prevent them from stepping on the structure. However, as long as their vessel is floating, do what you want on the boat.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you ever watched the original Lone Ranger, but if somebody in the middle of Illinois all of a sudden moves their stove and finds some massive gold or silver mine underneath the thing that makes everybody in Illinois whole, why is that Illinois' money?
I mean, you get into that too. I mean, you know, it's you look at your deed. Most of them don't include mineral rights.
But I mean, Alaska was bought with other people's money than the people that are sitting there right now. And yet, if you ask them, well, that's my oil. What do you mean it's your oil?
I guess Alaska has a National Guard, and therefore they have guns, and it's theirs.
Well, yeah, and it's sort of like the when the president obviously has very strong views over who, quote, belongs here and who doesn't. And yet, I look at the entire population here, and I don't know, did anybody ever really come here because they really wanted to? I mean, obviously, if you were Irish, you got here because the potatoes didn't grow. If you're black, somebody whacked you on the head and threw you on a ship, or something. I mean, they didn't come of their own free will. The Irish came of their own free will, but they basically had to leave. A lot of the people were penal colonists. Has there ever been like, how many rich Europeans with all kinds of education just said, hey, I'm packing up and I'm going to America? I mean, what percentage of the population, like a tenth of 1%?
Yeah, not many. And you know what? Gee, isn't it funny how those guys all seem to think that they have the right to tell the rest of us what to do?
Yeah, yeah. It's you know, we were talking the other day, and it's funny. If you went back, my psychology buddy, Dr. Johnson, was saying, and when we grew up, Carl, the difference was ethnicity in areas. I mean, you know, language was almost as big of a barrier as color, if not more.
Right.
I mean, there's places in Chicago where I can show you a Lithuanian church literally a half a block from an Irish church. And none of those people ever talk to each other. I mean, they managed to live in the same community without shooting each other, but I don't think, let's just say every basketball game was, Lugans versus the Irish, you know, right? I mean, every football game, nobody ever went on the other side and played. I mean, like I say, you weren't shooting, but people came here from different areas and pretty much were comfortable. Most of them couldn't speak English. I mean, nothing's a bigger barrier than to go sit in a room when everybody's speaking a language and you don't know it. I mean, it's go ahead.
Yeah, no, that was certainly true when I was living there. Pick your neighborhood, right? I mean, still there.
Well, the area out where Audrey lives, there's a large Arab community now. And depending on how you look at it, Carl, you look at it and say, well, you know, these women are wearing the scars. What the hell is that all about? But I also look at the kids. I don't think I've ever seen a group assimilate faster than those people. The kids all speak English fluently. I mean, they all have the, are into the American sports or into the, I mean, it looks to me like, they don't look like any kind of crazy ISIS people to me. I mean, it looks to me like they tried to get away from that stuff. So, I mean, it depends on how you look at stuff. You can say they're different, they shouldn't be here, or God, look how quickly they're not becoming different.
I think it depends on where you are, though, because, you know, you go up in Minneapolis and the crazies that have defected to ISIS over the last 10, 15 years.
Well, there's going
to
be a few,
but on a percentage representation basis, there's a problem there. All right. Now, is it a huge number of individuals? No. But statistical overrepresentation still is.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, you got to look at it and go, maybe we're not doing terrible, but I wouldn't say we're doing great.
No. I mean, there's still going to be some of that. And to be perfectly honest, Carl, there's an absolute worldwide tension. I'm sure it's been like this before, you know, not in our lifetimes, but, you know, there's people in this country that feel they're being put upon, economically and otherwise, if you look at it objectively, a lot of people are. There's an awful lot of people that haven't come out of the recession at all, I mean, I'm going to say a tremendous percentage, there's a pretty good percentage of society, whether it's 30%, 40%, it's now 1%. And there's people that absolutely are not part of the American dream. There's people that we've managed to suck into having huge loans and then they can't get a job. There's, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. And then you've got, I mean, the relentless, price gouging of, I'll say, the cities and the big companies. I mean, it's relentless in my mind. And there's very little competition. The ability to even if you're 15 doctors and you show up from Israel or whatever, try getting a group together and coming up with a new drug. You can't go anywhere with that.
Right, right.
You know, and
then you got this other problem that there's some work that I'm doing on this right now that a huge percentage of these new drugs work no better than the existing ones. Some work less.
Yep.
But they're all on patent and they're 10 times the price.
Did you happen to? I was kicking on the Cubs that just got done yesterday, so I'm flipping through my cable. And I come across this, every time I get on one of these things, I learn something, Carl. And it's scary, the things you don't know. I knew that near the end of his life, someone knows how I'm switching pages here, Hitler was on every kind of drug there was, right?
Yep.
And, I did not realize, what's Ebula or something, it's a serious narcotic, Edula, something. He was on that, then he was on oxycodone, then he was on cocaine, and the amount of experiments they did with people in these small submarines with combination of cocaine and oxycodone to keep people awake, and I mean, it's absolutely spectacular. But anyway, I didn't realize, I should have, I mean, I was supposed to know all this stuff, that one of the things that caused the end of the war to happen sooner is somehow the Allies found out about all this stuff and what they were doing with the Army guys and giving them, like, cocaine and uppers and downers to make them fight longer and so forth. So there was a huge air raid where they hit all these drug facilities. And guess who was like the biggest maker of oxycodone in Germany in 1944 and whatever this other narcotic was? Name me the company.
Well, probably Bayer, right?
Merck?
Yeah. Why am I surprised by that?
And I'm like, wait a minute. is that the same Merck today that we're bitching about making all the oxycodone? Here we are,
you know,
75 years
later. Right?
Here we are 75 years later. I'm going, you've got to be bleeping me. I sped the thing back and heard it again. Yeah, this was Merck. They were making all the oxycodone. I'm like, wait a minute. These leopards don't change their spots. I mean,
except that they find a way to, you know, it's they wheedle their way into the American consciousness, and then the, you know, then the monopoly comes.
Well, and we've got, and we have. I mean, we continually say that, you know, they got to get bigger to get more competitive. And yet, you know, probably one of the most famous economists, certainly of my time, was Milton Friedman, was absolutely convinced that once you reach a size, getting bigger is less efficient, not more. That maybe Squibb and those other places were big enough that are you really only taking them over to raise prices and decrease competition. You know, I don't know. I mean, I do know is that there hasn't been enough economic study to figure out that, you know, if you went from four airlines to two, that you gain anything. I think you'll lose, Carl, but I can't prove it.
Yeah, I think you probably do. And the other thing that always kind of surprises me is that, you know, we put a lot of lip service into competition and, you know, free enterprise and, Kudlow, what is it? Free enterprise, the best path to prosperity. And in reality, in the United States today, for the most part, it's a complete load of nonsense.
Sure is.
I mean, you know, about as far as it goes is your local bar.
Yep.
Okay.
Maybe,
literally, I mean, you know, the local pub that I go and drink at. There's five of them within a relatively short distance, and they really do compete with one another.
Right.
All right. You know, this one's got a happy hour this day. This one does 50-cent wings on this day. You know, there's real competition there. And if I'm unhappy with the price in one, I go to another or their attitude or whatever have you. try that with literally anything else. Okay. How many drug stores are there? What do you got? You got two big chains now. You got CVS and Walgreens, and then you got Walmart.
Well, I'm gonna say that, you still can have, there's some competition in Chicago in like retail, a little bit of retail groceries. There's quite a bit of, of course, Chicago did not let Walmart in the city. So you still have probably seven or eight, well, four or five grocery names you can go to. So there's a little bit there. Anyway, Carl, thank you very much, bud. We'll have you back on when the labor stuff comes out, if not before. Have a nice day. Have a nice week. SP Futures up 875. NASDAQ Futures up 3575. Come back, Mr. David Adelman. We'll talk about markets.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now.
Auto Bay Station Giants. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Mel Weber, Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. SP Futures up 8.75. NASDAQ Futures up 36.50. We're going to come back from last week's down week. We'll see if we do that. We are up this morning so far. Dow up 66. We've got the 10-year yield 2.03. It made it back to 2.11. Now it's coming back down as maybe there is going to be somewhat of a rate cut of some kind here. But I think we're going to get... I'm thinking quarter point, but who the hell knows? Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 59.5%. FTSE up 26.3%. CAC around up 16.3%. Asia, mixed bag. Well, not a mixed bag. They're all down, but in terms of depth. Nikkei down 50 points, 0.2%. That's not much. Shanghai down 37. That's 1.3%. Hang Seng down 394. That's 1.4%. A lot of that probably has to do with what's going on in Hong Kong. Got oil up yet again in the morning, but still, it goes nowhere. It's up 74 cents, but it's right at the number we've been talking about all last week. It was up every morning, but never really went anywhere. Brent up 83 to 63.30. We've got RBOB gas 184, down from almost $2. We've got gold up $1.30, 14.28. It's hanging up there near its highs. Silver up 22 cents. That's the one that's been the mover now. Kind of catching up with gold. What do you guys got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability. Is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue, and Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. We were off to a good start this morning, and now there's a report of an overturned vehicle blocking the left lane of the Reagan Memorial I-88 westbound just before York Road out in the western suburbs near Elmhurst and in that area. So it's a pickup truck on its side. Solid traffic on the outbound side of I-88, so keep that in mind, and that's starting to affect 290 as well. Inbound side with gapers too, so that's a trouble spot so far this morning. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic building on the Eisenhower further inbound. Same with the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways have been looking good all morning. Only other issue in the area, in the northern suburbs, Gilmer Road between Midlothian and Indian Creek Road is closed due to railroad crossing work. And that's causing a bit of confusion up there. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, mild temperatures, a high of 73. Right now it's mostly clear and 69 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one today, sunshine with a high of 110. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 94. In sports, Cubs and White Sox were both looking for sweeps yesterday. Both fell short. Cubs lost to the Padres at home 5-1. White Sox were doubled up by the Rays 4-2. Diamondbacks blew a 4-run lead against the Brewers, falling to Milwaukee 7-4. Hall of Fame has a couple of new members, White Sox great Harold Baines and Lee Smith, longtime Cub and great closer with the Cubs and Cardinals, among other teams. But he'll go into the hall with a Cub hat on. Both of those guys get in yesterday. Congratulations to them. And lastly, Shane Lowry wins your Open Championship 2019 edition, shooting minus 15, six shots ahead of the field.
Chief. Is Halliday the... David, how are you?
I'm fine.
Is Halliday the first guy to go in without a hat?
He went in without a hat?
Yeah. Because he was of like the exact amount of time with the Phillies and whoever else.
The Blue Jays?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I didn't realize that. I assume he wouldn't be the first one. But I didn't realize he was going... I always think of him as a Philly, but I guess because he won the World Series with them.
Yeah.
But he had just as many great years with the Blue Jays. You're right about that.
A couple of years ago, somebody went in and they had played on a bunch of teams, and there was a big controversy over what hat they would wear, and then they said maybe they should put people in from now on without a hat, and I don't know the word at all.
Why couldn't you have one hat with two logos on it?
There you go. Problem solved.
Well, he could give you two pictures, two plaques, but then why, you know...
No. One plaque, two hats, and, you know, Cubs on one side and Sox on the other side.
It looked like one of those hats that they sell at the park with the two bills on it.
Right.
It looked like, I don't know how big...
What do you think about Lee Smith going in as a Cub? I think he had 150 saves... he's the only closer ever to have 150 plus saves with two teams. 150 with the Cardinals, 150 with the Cubs.
I think if you come up as a Cub, you got to be a Cub. If you come up as a Cardinal, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying
to remember why the Cubs ever traded him.
I think of him as a Cub, but I bet Cardinal fans think of him as a Cardinal.
Well, you know, it's interesting that there was
a big thing against relief pitchers for a while. And as soon as one went in, now they're all going.
Well, clearly in today's game, they're very important.
Right.
Like, I mean, Mariano Rivera is just an absolute lock. You know, but you're right. For a long time, they didn't get their proper due. And they were of less importance back then, too.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean,
the starters were going complete games half the time.
Well, they were starters for a while, and then they became relievers. It wasn't a... I mean, at some point, I got to believe that Phil Regan is a consideration, even though he's 80 years old. I mean, Elroy Face, those guys were, you know, ahead of their time. There were a few guys that had that moniker about them, but it was sort of different that you put the reliever in. And then,
didn't Elroy Face win 18 games as a reliever in one season?
Well, yeah. Well, what's his name, the Vulture? Phil Regan won 17.
Right.
here's a good one for you. Who invented the save?
No idea.
Yeah, Weber, you should know this.
Who invented the save?
Who said, well, they got to do something for relievers and defined what a save was and said this is a new statistic.
I don't know.
Jerome Holzman of the Tribune. Or I don't know if he was the Tribune or the Daily Chicago Writer. He ended up being, he left writing to become the head of the baseball archives, wherever the hell that is, Cooperstown or someplace. But his column was, you know, everybody's always fighting to get the deadline. His column was the original In the Wake of the News, where you could write the thing the day after and have the whole story.
Yeah, a formula with more criteria for saves was invented in 1960 by baseball writer Jerome Holzman. He felt that the existing statistics at the time, ERA and win-loss record, did not sufficiently measure a reliever's effectiveness. Because ERA does not account for inherited runners that a reliever allows to score, and the win-loss record does not account for relievers protecting leads.
Right.
So, yeah, 1960.
And, yeah, I mean, before that, there was, you know, not much of anything. But even then,
and now they have the hold as well.
Yeah.
So they feel that the seventh and eighth inning guy that has a one run lead and protects it is maybe as important as the ninth inning guy.
Well, the last time I played softball, which hopefully I'll be playing next Sunday, a run in every inning counts, doesn't it? Same.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if. I mean, and a lot of times, you see it all the time, where the ninth inning guy comes in and faces 7, 8, 9 and mows him down, whereas the eighth inning guy has to face the heart of the order.
Yep.
And his hold may be more valuable that particular day than the actual save.
Remember in the, I don't think you've ever seen it, remember in, it happens every spring? All right, put the top of the batting order against this guy and see what they do. Get the schlumps out of there. Put the top of the batting order against this guy. Now it's the middle of the batting order. But, with the numbers, when the numbers used to be, and those old guys, they're spot in the batting order.
Right, the Yankees.
Yeah, it was
famously Ruth number 3, Gehrig number 4, yeah, et cetera.
Yeah, it was, I don't know who was number 1 on that team. It was another Hall of Famer, whoever the hell he was.
A shortstop, wasn't he?
Yeah, but there was a game.
It was a miracle that Derek Jeter was allowed to wear number 2.
Yeah,
assuming that they had to have had some great number 2s with the Yankees back in the day.
Yeah, wasn't Bobby Richardson a 2 for them? Back in the Nolly Fox was a 2.
Yeah,
Aparicio was a 1. He led off, right?
Aparicio was 11.
That's right. He was 11. He would have been Nolly Fox was 2.
Shows my age.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was a hell of a player.
Yeah.
Let's swing into the markets here, David. We got earnings. They've been worse than last quarter, but then they're not. Some of them aren't as bad as they say they're going to be.
Right.
So we've got that. Whenever you get the crummy quarter, guys put the thing so low that you don't even really know what the hell's going on. But we still have. We had Fari last week talk about if you're going to buy Netflix, you should wait till Monday. And I got them down again this morning, 3:13. I don't know these stocks that are. Some of these stocks that head south, you almost don't want them. I mean,
I think Netflix, the game has changed. I mean, they were talking this morning. I mean, it's not the same live theater as, you know, streaming and original content. They're not the same. But Disney's coming, and Disney is, and I own no shares. I'm pretty sure I don't have any shares in full disclosure. But or maybe 200 for one customer. But box office, you know, 185 million this weekend for Lion King, biggest July opening ever, and 40% of the box office this year going to Disney, and they're coming with streaming big time, and, you know, domestic user growth for Netflix declined, and it just, I'm not saying a firm can't have a bad quarter, and I did point out last week that Netflix second quarter, for whatever reason, has traditionally been the weakest, but I'm not saying the stock's going to zero. Maybe it goes to 295, holds and goes back to 360. Who knows? But the competition is coming big time. AT&T's sorting out with Warner. Comcast is, you know, aligning with Netflix, and it's not the same as it was even one or two quarters ago.
I would say you're right, David. I might have had a. Unbeknownst to me, I think I clicked on something wrong once where I had a Netflix subscription for like a month till I found out about it and I canceled it. So I mean, it's not like I love the place or anything, but I will say this about Netflix. From the days that they used to get the CDs in your mailbox and you know, dropped them back with and you know, it was a day turnaround or whatever the hell it was. I'm stunned, or I won't say whatever the word is, I've always been impressed in a very quickly changing industry, with those guys being able to change with it.
They've led it.
Yeah.
They went from CDs to streaming to original content to, you know, not just in movies but in TV series to winning, you know, multiple, you know, Emmys and the like, and no question. But it's you know, and they were not, for a good part of that, you know, while Comcast always had on demand and, you know, bought all movies or whatever, they were leaders and innovators. But, you know, the big dog Disney's coming, and there's many beyond.
Oh, I don't disagree.
I mean, Amazon, we just got a free trial of Netflix for a month, and we watched, you know, 8 movies over the weekend and some TV series as well. And we had dinner with some folks, late 70s, early 80s, so I'm not talking new gen. And they said, oh, you know, Netflix, that's the past. You know, are you an Amazon Prime member? Because Amazon streaming is much better. You know, get that. So, I mean, you know, when you have to face Disney and Amazon and Time Warner and Comcast, your hands are full. And yes, there was some semblance of that in the past, but not like now.
Well, I don't disagree. I just wonder, you know, has their management gotten old and fat and happy, or the guys that were, you know, on the competitive edge, are they still there? I don't really know anything about that, but clearly, you know, a lot of the guys that are there, did they get their stock at $5 and get out at 360 and say thank you very much? And, you know, I mean, companies, it's all about your leadership in a lot of ways, and
they have great leadership.
Well, they have traditionally. Now the question is, are the same guys still there? Are new guys still there? And are they still hungry is the question.
I think the answer is yes. I think they're hungrier than ever because they feel the competition. But there's only so much you can do. When your net cash flow is negative and has been negative for a long time, and whether it's, I don't know the balance sheet, I don't know whether it's debt or secondary stock offerings or that, I don't know. But if you have to spend $15 billion a year in content and hope, you know, that it hits the right chord. And they said this last quarter that their content was not up to snuff, as indicated by awards and polls. You spend $15 billion and the big dogs are coming, and your content is not striking, and your cash flow is negative. And I'm not making any case for shorting the stock, not when it's come off like this. And I don't own any, nor am I short any. But let's put it this way. You were talking about buying it, and I'm not saying that's wrong. There is a price that it's worth, but I don't know what that price is.
I actually do believe, this maybe my age talking here or experience, one or the other, I think the winners, David, are going to be the people who own the pipes. And that kind of puts, you can always, I mean, Disney is an exception because people go to the movie houses and see them. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to be the people that own the access to your home, which is now AT&T. Why they were ever allowed to buy DirecTV, I have no idea. I'm one of these days, I'm sure Comcast.
And Time Warner.
Yeah, well, one of these days, Comcast will buy Dish, and we'll have some dodo from government telling us that it's still competitive. But I mean, I have we have Comcast and we have Infinity. I think we have two, and I think you can get
Comcast. Xfinity is Comcast.
Oh, who's the other one? We have two in our area that we can use, and then you can sort of get AT&T. They have it's not cable, but it's something. Where you can get an internet.
There's Hughes Network and there's RCN.
RCN and Comcast are the two that are competing in our area, and you can get the internet over AT&T. So we got like 2.5 contributors. Okay, you can't get cable from AT&T, but you can get if you didn't want cable, you could get AT&T and get a what do they call it? Some other kind of line that brings in the internet, like we have here in the office.
Right.
And but I mean, where Audrey lives, it's all AT&T. You know, so they can pretty much push her around however they want.
Right.
And they're the phone line too. So there's no, it's not like there's AT&T phone line. Oh, by the way,
no, you can get your phone. No, and that's how it's by us. It's Comcast and Verizon, and that's it.
Can you still get an AT&T phone line if
yes, direct line, but that's it.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is not very competitive, and at the end of the day, I think the people it's like all you have to do is look at your electric bill and your gas bill, and then they talk about how they're going to help you make your house more energy efficient. Well, they want you to do that now because they sold off a lot of the electrical generating capacity. They just want the pipe into your house. They don't care if you use anything. Go get a windmill.
No, you're
still,
right.
Still pay me $50 a month for the plug into the street you never use. By the way, 10 years from now it'll be 100, right? it's amazing how our elected officials that are supposedly, continually get pushed around and suckered by these guys. But it's happened in our entire lifetime, David. It's not going to stop tomorrow, so there's not much point.
I wonder how that gets oriented. You go from one community to literally next door, and you got two services in each one. For internet and television, and you go 5 miles away and it's two different ones, or Comcast and something else, or AT&T and Verizon. I wonder who decides that.
Well, I mean, in the city, but I mean, if you want to get AT&T in my hood, if you go to the AT&T site, the first thing you do is want to know your specific address,
right?
To whether they can even you're far enough away
right.
from, because evidently whatever they use, it was a DSL line or something. However far away from the switch box, they can either promise you good service or not.
Right.
So, I mean, our building here is now, Comcast just got in here, downtown. Now, they just, they bust up the sidewalk and now they're here. Before that, for your TV, you could only get the dish. And there was only one other person coming in the back. Even AT&T, phone lines, I don't think they did the, They didn't have a big. I don't think you get a T1 through because I mean, how many T1s do we have at PTI? About six. I mean, so it's we've got all these high speed now, but now Comcast can say we'll have some competition in the building. Now whether or not our price will go down or not, David, who the hell knows? But but at least you got two people to talk to.
Comcast typically. I mean, I've had service by myself with partners and the like for 35 years, and it's like there's always something great for 2 years, and then all of a sudden, just up.
Oh, yeah, and then you got to call them. Well, that's what I've switched my cable virtually every 2 years of my house.
Yeah.
RCN for a while.
And here or there, you can play games. I'm canceling, or, somebody else has given it to me for free, or you put it in a different name and, get the introductory price for 2 years. But when you run out of that, it's going to the roof.
Well, the thing that's relentless is the $60 a month in tax.
Yeah.
All right, David. So we had a down week. We've had oil up every morning, but at the end of the week was down, right? I mean, or at least unchanged.
Yeah.
We are up this morning. Are we going to be able to hold it? I don't know. It looks to me like we're a little tired here, and we're
starting. Yeah, it might be a trading range. I mean, I did say last Monday I thought that it would challenge again. Over 3,000 in the S&P. You got the, I think, 3,009, busted back to whatever, 2,970. So, I mean, that isn't a lot, but it's something. You went down 35 handles, so you went down 1.5%, 2%, whatever. And I said, you know, 2 to 5%. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I really think maybe more, but you know, maybe you have to wash out over 3,000 again. I mean, I don't know what the trigger is. In July, August are typically, you know, bank holidays in Europe, and some, you know, mining holidays, and this and that and the other, and end of year, you know, trips with the kids before they go back to school here, and they tend to be rather lethargic. So maybe it's a 29.50 to 30.25 market in the S&P for a while. May just evolve into a training range. And, you know, maybe down at 29.50, you have to buy it for a minute, and, you know, when you wash out 30.05 to 30.13 in the S&P, you sell it.
What? Why all of a sudden, after all these years of people pouring dollars, euro dollars, anything into the various economies trying to make things happen, and let's just say they probably didn't, at least not to the extent that people want them to happen, why all of a sudden now, what does gold and silver see? Or the fact that it's going up just means people want to be in it?
I think it's just the low interest rates.
Well, I mean,
And I know they were there before, and gold couldn't get out of its own way, and silver as well. Silver, I totally don't understand. I mean, you know, people, I think, still want to believe that it's a precious metal rather than an industrial metal. My view is that it isn't. And if anything, to me, you know, if inflation's coming back, or the dollar's, you know, weakening, or this or that or the other, or just the storage costs are less, I can see gold, but slowing, you know, domestic economy, no signs of much of a rebound in Europe, certainly slowing in China, and still slow in Japan and the like, I don't see the case for silver.
I wonder,
I mean, other than it's a laggard and the ratio is so high.
Yeah, it's
so
good. Oh,
maybe as a reversion to the mean type of play, maybe. But otherwise, from a fundamental standpoint, I don't see it.
One thing's for sure is the if you played the politics and used that as your market trading, certainly for the last 2.5 years. I doubt if you have a positive account. I mean, it's been very difficult to do that.
Right.
I mean, in fact,
you're one tweet away from either elation or depression.
I still think, though, David, the president does that, but to me, the ones I lock in on, nobody turned the market like that guy from the New York Fed. That, to me, was a new low last week, where he came out with that ridiculous speech, and then afterward he said he didn't mean it. He was talking about some research. He turned the NASDAQ.
Sounds like the old Bernanke.
Yeah, he turned the market 90 points in NASDAQ, for God's sake. I mean, I wonder if we've gone from place to place. We've got the sanctions in Iran. Now that's heating up. So obviously, pulling out of the treaty just to spite Obama, or whatever reason he did it. I don't know. Now we've got the thing with China unresolved. Mexico, that's not passed yet either. It seems like we keep putting more and more open items into the middle of the table, and I wonder if the market is, I mean, who knows what the market thinks, but and the Fed is
the
like
spending limits, yeah. the Iranian, you know, taking the British tanker. I mean, it's a mess.
And you've got the central banks around the world with this relentless pounding of their stuff to where the dollar's going up, and the president, I think rightly so, is wondering what the hell's going on there. But then again, do you want to send the Fed down a rat hole going on that way? Because we are the reserve currency. We're not supposed to do that stuff. You know, it's okay if some third world place wants to do something crazy with theirs, but, you know, the world depends on the dollar. So, you know, we shouldn't say, okay, now we're going to get this quarter point, drop, which, you know, nobody probably even thinks we need, but let's say they do it. It's not the end of the world one way or the other. Now, what happens if that doesn't, quote, save us, David? I don't know what the save is. I mean, is there some point here where the market just says, I don't see a solution to any of this stuff in sight, and maybe the politics does work for a week? I don't know. It hasn't yet.
I don't know the answer to that. It really seems like the market is trying to fight its way through all these headlines.
All right, David, you got to hold that thought, buddy. We'll talk about it on Thursday.
Okay.
S&P futures up 875. NASDAQ futures up 34. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.